There's always something new from our sponsor, Text Control. They just released version 30 of their document processing library that includes new document collaboration features. Using TX Text Control, you can integrate online document editing, document signing, collaboration, and PDF processing into your ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core web applications. Whether you need to create PDF invoices, quotations, or reports, TX Text Control provides the developer libraries for all document-related tasks. Check out the new features and see their technologies in action by visiting the live demo at demos.textcontrol.com. That's demos.textcontrol.com. Hey friends, I'm Scott Hanselman, and it's another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm chatting with Kirsten Westeinde. She's a senior development manager at Shopify. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am always excited to talk to people who have been in the biz for a while, and I'm excited to talk to you. So that's how I am. I am great. So you are at Shopify. How many places did you work before Shopify, if you don't mind my asking?
I actually joined Shopify full-time while I was still in school as an intern. I did two internships with Shopify prior to that. So really, it's the only place I've ever technically had a real job. I did two internships prior to that at different software companies, but the vast majority of my career has been with Shopify.
That's cool. Right now, I think that there's a lot of people excited to get into tech, and there's also a lot of people talking about how to move up in a company. And now that I have just celebrated my 15 years at Microsoft, and now you are coming up on almost 10 at Shopify. Do you ever have people coming to you for advice and they want to know why you didn't leave and go to Google or Amazon or one of these FANG companies? Like, I suppose you could if you felt like it.
Absolutely. I think it's less and less common to see people staying at companies for as long as the two of us have been. And I definitely have lots of chats with people just starting out, both looking for advice on moving up and just getting into the industry and kind of figuring out where they should be focusing. So yes, definitely.
Is it because you're like, you're happy or you're not chasing the dollar? Because for me, it was every time I got bored, some new technical problem popped up. And I was like, I think I'll stay another year. And then it just happened. And you know, if it got really boring, I would have left. And it just isn't.
Yeah. I mean, on paper, I've worked for the same company for 9-ish years now, but in reality, the Shopify that I joined is like a completely different company from the Shopify that it is today. I joined and there was 150 employees. We all worked out of the same office. We worked on two main products. Whereas fast forward to today, it's like more than 10,000 employees. We're completely remote, working on a ton of different problems. And so while yes, it is true that I have worked at the same company for this long, it has evolved so much, and like the problems that we were looking at have evolved so much, the culture, the opportunities. So yeah, it really has been a matter of I have never gotten bored, and every year I'm doing a completely different job than I was doing the year before because of how much of a kind of growth-oriented culture it is and how many opportunities were presented to me. So being bored is not a problem that I have yet encountered in my time here.
That's awesome. And then you do get like, you're getting a new job. There's promotions, but there's also complete job shifts, right? Where you were a line developer when you started, and now you're a senior development manager. So you're a manager of managers now.
Yeah, that's correct. So I think like two things have happened for me in my journey at Shopify. One is this element of moving up, which you have alluded to, and to actually taking on new responsibilities, because I'm a big believer that going from being a developer to being a manager is not a step along the same ladder. It's actually a completely different job with completely different skills required. But then among that journey, I've also moved kind of like horizontally across the organization and worked on completely different products and technologies and problem spaces. So I've spent, in my 9 years here, I've worked on four different teams and spent like about 2 to 3-ish years on each one. And through that kind of amalgamated skills and knowledge that have allowed me to at the same time move up and take on more and more responsibilities.
When you started your first job as a manager, is a manager at Spotify the most technical developer who also has, you know, the developers work for them? Or do you suddenly stop developing? Because I've seen different companies have different philosophies where like the most technical becomes a manager. And I've seen other ones that like the most nice, the most people person becomes the manager. And sometimes those things work good and sometimes they don't.
Yeah, I would say the answer to that question would be different depending on like which point in Shopify's history you zoom in on. So there was a time early on where we actually didn't have a distinction between a management career trajectory path and a individual. And so the only way to like move up was to become a manager. That hasn't been the case for many years now. Like we now have a completely separate individual contributor track, and every management level has a equivalent IC level where they are equally viewed as leaders and equally have an impact on the kind of direction that the team builds in, but they do not have people reports. And so their leadership comes a lot more through influence and mentorship rather than like, you know, directly being a leader of those people. But that said, like managers are still very, very technical people at Shopify. And, you know, we are expected to understand the work that our team does and have an opinion about it, and often are in a unique position to be able to help guide the technical strategy because of the different vantage point of like what we are building towards. And often because of the like increased amount of collaboration we have with different parts of the organization. So we can sometimes see things that might become a problem that the team who's more focused on the technical implementation might not see. But I also think that there's an element of like situational leadership to be taken into account here. Like I've been in positions where my team might be like fairly new to Shopify or skewed on the fairly junior side. And the way that I can best support them is by being in the weeds with them, leading them technically, giving them feedback on their PRs and on their designs. And there have been other times where I've been leading teams of extremely senior individuals who I completely trust their technical judgment. And the best thing that I can do is kind of leave them be and let them make the decisions while making sure that they have the context that they need to make the right decisions. I guess the answer is it depends.
No, but what I heard you say, though, is that it's about situational leadership, and a good leader knows when to jump in and say, I'm needed in the trenches. And a good leader needs to know, you know, I think this group knows what they're doing. I'll do some blocking and tackling. I'll make sure that they have what I call executive air cover so that they can go and do the thing that they need to do without any threats of being shut down or being blocked. And you've done both of those roles, which is super interesting. It also seems very progressive that Shopify recognizes that individual contributors don't always want to be people managers, and that feeling that someone has of like, well, I guess I just be a senior engineer forever, or I become a manager. And that's a very uncomfortable fork in the road. And I don't think anyone should have to make that decision.
Yeah. And I think that we have landed here because we didn't necessarily get it right in the beginning. And I think it's a pitfall that a lot of companies fall into. But I think many of us have had the experience of having a manager who like clearly doesn't want to be a manager. And obviously that's not the best. And I think when you do have a manager who it's actually a skill set that they're working at and that they're intentionally building and that they really do have the kind of like skills and interests to support you in your career development, it can make such a difference. So like we have really found that was one of the most important things we did to support the overall kind of like career development of people at Shopify.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I find really confusing as someone who lives in the Pacific Northwest is that I'm making a generalization here, even though I know you're in Canada, that the company, I think, is it based in the Bay? Is Shopify a Bay Area company? Is that a fair statement? Or are you a Canadian company?
No, it's actually founded in Ottawa, Ontario, in Canada by two German people. So
I did not know that. Well, my apologies. Yeah. But my question is this title thing, every company is different. We have to go to levels.fyi to figure out the mapping. Because you had said during our chat before the show started about the rank of staff engineer. And I was like, I don't know what that means. Is there a standardized, how do you all decide like senior and staff? And can you maybe explain the ranks a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. So at Shopify, we have, interns are typically how we get kind of like entry level talent in. And then we have what we call like grad developers. So those are kind of the newer to the workforce. And then just regular developers, senior developers. And after senior developer, that is where the split happens between either the manager or the individual contributor track. And so if you do go down the individual contributor track, that's where staff developers come in. So that's a level above senior. And staff developers are the exact same level as a development manager. They get paid with the same compensation framework. They are expected to have the same scope of impact, albeit in very different ways. And then, you know, you continue to go up. We have a senior staff developer after that, which maps to a senior development manager on the individual mm-hmm. contributor track. And then we have principal developers, which map to directors on the people track. And then we have what we call distinguished engineers, which we only have very few of at Shopify, and they map to the VP on the people leadership track, which we also have very few of at Shopify.
Interesting. Yeah. And folks can go to levels.fyi, just as I have, because for me, it was really fascinating to learn that a principal developer at a Google or an Amazon or a Shopify is very highly ranked. Like, it's almost a distinguished engineer. It's a very technical leadership position, which is a slightly different role than the same title, principal at Microsoft. And that kind of currency conversion, the titles currency conversion, for lack of a better word, is always very confusing. But do you all base those kind of ranks on simply years in the work? Or how does someone come into the company and you go, yeah, they feel like a senior. Yeah, they feel like a staff.
Yeah, years in the industry can be a good indicator, but it doesn't always map directly to things. Like, some individuals will work in super high growth environments or will have had like a very wide variety of experiences in a short amount of time and can deliver impact at, say, a staff level in ways that someone who maybe has worked in a less fast-paced environment for 10 years and who hasn't been as kind of like learning and growth oriented could. So for us, like, years in the industry can be like a helpful input to figure out where to start, but it's not at all like a be all end all. We have pretty clearly defined job level frameworks. And then we also have, I guess, like almost things to look for throughout the interview process to help us figure out leveling. And so some of our interviews are kind of like, you know, talk about a project that you have worked on recently that you know really well. And we can kind of figure out by the depth that they're able to talk about the problem and also by the scope of their impact, like how much do they talk about their kind of specific little area of the project versus the overall project and kind of like how they worked across the different stakeholders or organizations. So a lot of it is just about the scope of the impact that we believe that they will be able to have. And our interview process is like very much set up to glean those things along the way.
That seems really cool. I mean, I keep using the word progressive, but I just mean to think that to say that it's very kind of forward thinking, it's very human way of doing things. It sounds like that's probably one of the reasons that you stayed at Shopify for so long, is that it has a very kind of human culture. There's a lot of conversations right now amongst early and career people who are feeling that there's too much focus on what are called LEET code exercises, which is just like, come here and jump through this hoop and use a binary tree when you do the jumping. What is your feeling, you know, whether it be your personal feeling or whether you can speak on behalf of Shopify, about those kinds of, you know, Olympic level puzzles that we give people to become an engineer at a company?
Yeah. I mean, I think the most likely predictor of how someone will succeed on a job is by like putting them in an environment that most closely matches what that job will be. I have yet to be put in a position in my many years in the industry of needing to like solve a problem like that without being able to use Google, without being able to look things up. So I don't really see the value in questions like that. Definitely the way that we run interviews is like, you can use Stack Overflow because you would be in a real world situation. You can ask me questions because it's a collaborative environment and that's how you would work in, again, in a real world situation. And also, like, interviews are stressful. And I think the more that we can do to remove that stress and to make it like a human to human interaction, the more likely we'll get to see how that person would actually behave in a work situation. So that's generally what we try to do, is to try to like give people an environment that is most similar to what we'll be asking from them day to day and see how they behave in that situation.
Yeah. I always imagine that if I did an interview and they gave me a LEET code question, that I would have the chutzpah to say, do we do a lot of LEET code here on whiteboards? Like, is that a really representative? But I know that would be probably would end the interview very quickly if I came at him like that. But we at Microsoft are trying to put people in, like, let's join the team. Like it's the interview is your first day at the job. Let's see how we would work together.
Absolutely. And I think that like interviewer is a two-way conversation as well, right? Like, it's not only important that the company feels that the individual will add value, it's also important that the individual feels like the company will help them with their, like with the types of things that they want to learn, that it'll be a culture that they feel like they can thrive in. Like, we give so much of our lives to work, and it's so important that we work in a place that we're happy with, and that like day to day, at the end of the day, we're like, yeah, that was cool. Like, I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm contributing to an important mission. Like, all of those things are equally important. So I think Shopify views it as a two-way conversation of like, and also this is why we think you should work here, because it is a competitive environment, and it is important that we are hiring people that are excited to be here, because they will be the ones that will do the best work.
Hey friends, let's take just a moment and thank our sponsor. This episode of Hansel Minutes is sponsored by Datadog, a cloud scale monitoring platform that unifies metrics, logs, and traces from technologies like Istio, AppMesh, and Envoy. Plus, Datadog's service map automatically plots out the dependencies in your microservices architecture for seamless, context-rich troubleshooting. With rich visualizations, algorithmic alerting, and more than 450 vendor-supported integrations, Datadog allows you to monitor your distributed applications in real time. Start a free 14-day trial today by visiting datadoghq.com/Hansel Minutes. That's datadoghq.com/Hansel Minutes. And Datadog will send you a complimentary t-shirt. Let's see if we can get into a little bit of, and I don't usually do this, but let's see if we can get into a little bit of controversy and see if we can get into trouble. If someone is listening to this show and they say, well, you know, Kirsten's been there 9 years, Hanselman's been there 15, they're both high level at a company and they're speaking from this place of, we'll call it level privilege. And I, the listener, as a new early in career person, the only way I can be successful is by going to a company, hanging out for a year, and then bouncing to another. And then I have a resume that's a year at Apple, a year at Google, a year at Facebook, a year at Microsoft. And then now I can dig in and do stuff. Do you give them the advice that, hey, that's the right thing to do for you? Bounce around diagonal and hop, 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 or stay somewhere and maybe suffer for 9 or 15 years?
I don't know that there's any one right recipe. Like, I think if you are unhappy somewhere, I would never advise you to stay and power through it. Like, I think that there are situations in which it makes perfect sense to leave, and there are situations in which it makes sense to kind of stay and power through. What I have found is that often the times that I've been the most tempted to leave have been the times when I have been finding things the most challenging. But those are also the times when I am growing the most. Like, I think when you're outside of your comfort zone and when you've kind of stepped outside of your box and are moving into the next level, it can often feel very uncomfortable. Because you're practicing new skills that you are not yet good at. And, you know, you might be coming from a position of like being used to being an expert at something, and all of a sudden you're a novice at something. And so it can be tempting to like run in those situations. But often by like staying and powering through and practicing those skills and getting feedback and just putting in practice, you can kind of get better. I also find that it takes like minimum 3, but like more often kind of like 6 months to get really onboarded into a place and understand how the technology works, what the kind of like principles for making decisions are, who the right people to talk to figure something out is, like what the process is. And so in some ways I do kind of think people would be doing themselves a disservice to always be moving around so much without letting themselves get fully onboarded and then seeing the impact that they can have kind of like on top of that foundation.
Yeah. I like that you're calling out that there's a difference between discomfort, whether it be, wow, I'm in over my head, or wow, the water's a little deep here, I can only touch the bottom of the pool if I on my tiptoes, and toxicity. Certainly we would not recommend that anyone stay if their identity or their vibe or anything is despised. But we definitely, I think we're both agreeing that we want people to stick around when it gets a little uncomfortable. You need to ask yourself, is it culturally uncomfortable, which is a good reason to leave, or is it like technically uncomfortable? And that's where growth happens, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, I think that there are some situations like having, you know, a boss who like undermines you or who is not supportive of you that like, you know, you shouldn't stay there through, or, you know, if you're to your point, like if there are cultural issues or if kind of your values are not aligned with the values of the company, no amount of like working hard is going to get make that situation better or get you through that. And you should absolutely find somewhere that is more aligned with your values and with kind of how you want to operate. But if it's a matter of feeling uncomfortable because you like are out of your depth or like you're not 100% sure what the right answer is, or, you know, to your point, like there's a really hairy technical problem ahead and you're not sure that you have what it takes to solve it. Like those are the kind of things where actually staying and powering through can be beneficial. Now, I will say, like, so long, one important ingredient to those situations being successful is having access to mentorship and having access to people that you can turn to, because it's not at all that you have to kind of like bear down and figure it all out yourself. It's more that could you, with the kind of resources that you have and the time that you have, solve it and learn from it? And for me, that answer has always been yes at Shopify. But I think I have been very, very lucky to have access to lots of incredibly smart people who are willing to help and who are willing to give me the time of day to like help me get unblocked. So I think that's another important ingredient too. Like if there is a technical challenge ahead of you that you do feel overwhelmed about and you don't know how to solve, like, and you don't have any support to solve it, that could lead to a different outcome.
That is a really good call out. I appreciate that, because what you're saying is that being faced with an incredibly difficult technical challenge and being alone at night in a dark room on a Wednesday, and you've already put 40 hours in that week and it's already Wednesday and there's nobody to call, that's not a healthy environment. But if you're like, you know, it's time for me to find my mentor or call the CTO or the chief architect or whatever, like, can you help me through this moment? It's like, I need a life vest. I'm in the deep end and there's no life vest. That's scary. Get out of the pool. So it sounds like you and I have been very fortunate to have technical mentors and guidance. So it's like, you know, it's the deep end, but there's a lifeguard. And because when people say power through, I think in the day that we are now in 2022, a lot of people think that we're saying, suck it up, you know, fortify. Bleh. And that gets into toxic hustle culture. But you and I are really saying, you're safe. It's okay. We want you to succeed in the deep end. We're here if you need anything, just holler. And you've had that culture. And hopefully you're making that culture now as a manager of managers at Spotify for your new people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you asked me earlier on in our conversation, like, do people often come to you and kind of ask for advice on how to join the workforce and how to move up? And that's actually always my number one piece of advice is, like, early on, you should be optimizing for learning and you should be looking for places where mentorship is part of the culture and is part of the expectations of developers at every level, and where teaching is a craft and is something that is valued, and where you really will have access to resources to kind of help you level up and grow. Because sure, like if you write code for 5 years, you're going to learn something. Like if you write it alone in a room for 5 years, you're for sure going to learn something. But if you write it like amongst masters and get feedback along the way and get input about how you're thinking about things, like you will get so much farther. So I think that is a really important thing to look out for, is looking out for organizations and teams where teaching and learning is really valued and where there's access to resources to constantly be leveling up. Because like software and technology is such a quickly changing field. And it is one of those things where you don't like level up because you know everything. You level up because you've acquired the skills to learn quickly.
Oh my goodness. That right there. I just need people to get that, because you and I have been in tech for a long time because we weren't chased out. We were mentored and we're here. And the reason that we know more than you, theoretical listener, is simply because we've seen a bunch of stuff and we were given the space to fail, right? And you weren't like fired when you failed. You're like, oh, well, you learned and now you'll know. We've seen some stuff, you know, oh, I've seen some things. I'm sure that that's the same thing. You know where all the bodies are buried at Shopify.
Yeah, but that brings up a really good point. Another thing to look out for, like in finding which companies you can kind of grow within, is look at how they approach failure. Like, is failure something that is like swept under the rug and that no one talks about? Or is it something that is celebrated and leaders get up and share like about this big mistake that I made? Because you learn the same amount from wins as failures, and arguably maybe more from failures. And so I think when there are cultures of not blaming individuals, but looking at situations and figuring out what can be gleaned from it, I think that is also super key to accelerating learning.
Mm-hmm. So you all have been working on a specific problem. I mean, many problems, of course. You said you've worked at four or five different things at Shopify, but a specific problem was deconstructing a monolith. The monolith, I'm assuming, was Shopify itself, kind of became the, we would call it the big ball of mud. Like, it's just a big thing. And you've been taking that apart since what, 2016 now?
Yeah. Yeah. We initially realized that we needed to do something in 2016, and the efforts kind of kicked off in earnest in 2017 after some initial investigation and planning. But yeah, for the last, gosh, what year is it? For the last 6 years, I guess, we've been on a mission to what we call componentize our monolith. So typically, monoliths struggle from the fact that, to your point, they're a big ball of mud. There's no boundaries between things. And on the extreme opposite end of the spectrum, we have microservices where they're completely separate deployment units and they have very hard boundaries and communication happens across an API. We kind of settled for something more like in the middle. We call it a modular monolith, which is basically the idea of defining subdomains within a monolith and then putting up some sort of boundaries between them. So it is still technically a monolith in the sense that it is one deployment unit, one set of infrastructure, all the code lives in one code base, but there are clearly defined subdomains and clearly defined boundaries that the different subdomains have to respect to communicate with each other, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't go all the way. Like, you didn't just move the slider bar from ball of mud to a bunch of microservices just because it was in vogue, right? Because there's value in a monolith. We had Roberta Arcoverde, who is a developer engineering manager at Stack Overflow, on the show a while back. And they are happily a monolith, and you check out all of Stack Overflow and you build it and it works nicely. What was the reason? What was the pain, though, like, to take this giant Ruby on Rails application that was Shopify and to break it up? Why bother?
Yeah. So in 2016, we had kind of reached a scale where there were at that point, like hundreds of developers working in this main monolith. At this point now, we're talking about thousands. Mm. And because of how, like, our teams are structured around more focused domains. And so, you know, if you're a developer at Shopify, like, maybe you work on payments or maybe you work on shipping, but we don't necessarily want you to have all of the context about how the entire system works to be able to make an effective change in the, like, payment domain. But because of how, like, intertwined all the different pieces were, often if you were adding code, let's continue with the payments example, in that domain and you ran the tests, all of a sudden, like, checkout was broken somehow. And so we really wanted to make sure that, like, it felt like people were working in a smaller code base in the sense that they only had to understand in depth how their little piece of the world worked. And they didn't have to pull on all of these strings to find out why a certain test was breaking or why a certain functionality in another area had broken. And so really it was about, like, velocity and enjoyment of working in the code base. Like, it was taking longer and longer to build features of the same complexity. And often, like, to add a new piece of functionality, you'd have to do so much upfront refactoring to even, like, disentangle things enough to be able to add new functionality. So it was a lot about trying to kind of, like, make the overall code base feel like a collection of smaller worlds rather than one large world that you had to understand the entirety of, which just was not possible for any one developer.
Yeah. It's cool also that you called out the developer enjoyment. Like, it's just not fun to work in this code base. We should do something. Like, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to measure and to look at.
Yeah. Actually, like, the main impetus for kicking this off was we have an annual, we call it the developer happiness survey, that we send out to all the developers at Shopify. And it asks about things like satisfaction with tooling and with our infrastructure. And, like, it's quite a comprehensive survey. But one of the main things that really woke us up to, like, okay, we need to do something here, was a clear decline year over year in how, yeah, to your point, like, how much enjoyment people were finding in working in the code base.
And forgive my ignorance, I'm a statically typed, like, developer. I tend to do things in, you know, C# or TypeScript. Is it still true that on Ruby on Rails, because you don't have that ability to, like, compile and know that it's going to fail if I rename a function, you cover that with tests and that's how you know that something broke?
Essentially, yes. Yeah, like, through testing and through, we call it top hatting. I don't actually know if that's an industry term, but like through verifying your functionality locally. There are obviously like syntactic sugar, like if you spell something wrong and it doesn't sure. know what you're referring to, like it'll call that out for you. But yeah, a lot of how changes are validated is done through testing and through actually just like running the code.
Okay. I was just trying to get my head around that because I know that like there are static analyses that one can do, but I was curious if like you have to run the code and that's when you know if it ultimately works or how much upfront static analysis can happen. Because it's one of the largest Ruby on Rails code bases in the world, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. There is some a good amount of upfront static analysis. Like it is rare that you will come across a basic or obvious error while you're testing things. But of course, we do always want that kind of like solid test coverage and also validation of our features. And maybe this is a tangent, but one thing that we actually find like a benefit that we find out of that is that all developers are using the product because they are running through the use cases that they are changing. And so we tend to have we also don't have a QA team. So we tend to have a development team that is very kind of aware of our product and how our users use it and what some of the like pain points with using it are, which is a nice benefit.
You know, that's cool that they use it. Like, does that mean that like people who work at Shopify can have their own Shopify stores and they can have like a side hustle?
Absolutely. It's very encouraged. Yeah. Like we get free staff stores where you can basically like not pay the subscription. And there's also like, different expense programs that you can use to kind of like start your own business. So it's really encouraging. We actually have a lot of employees who have some very legit Shopify stores.
That's awesome. So like in closing, you started this monolith move in 2016. Is it a forever project or are you coming to the end of it?
Yeah, it's a forever project. I mean, I think the scale of our system continues to change so much. The scale of people working on it continues to change so much. The problem space is also a moving target. So it definitely is something where like year over year, we are making progress and we are learning new things and continuing to evolve our approach. So I'd be lying if I said it was done. We're all wrapped up. Everything works perfectly. There's always work to do to ensure that your system continues to be well-designed and fun to work in.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for chatting with us today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We've been chatting with Kirsten Wistanda. She's a senior development manager at Shopify. And I'll put links in the show notes to some of the information on the Shopify engineering blog, where you can hear about her journey, as well as Shopify's journey to the modular monolith. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.